听力课堂，听 class.com。
Unit 14 B
Part 1 A When people think of crowded countries or regions, they usually contemplate places like the Netherlands, 1,031 per square mile, or Hong Kong, 14,218. Even those don't necessarily signal overpopulation. After all, the Dutch seem to be thriving, and doesn't Hong Kong have a booming economy and fancy hotels? In short, if density were the standard of overpopulation, few nations, and certainly not Earth itself, would be likely to be considered overpopulated in the near future. The error, we repeat, lies in trying to define overpopulation in terms of density. It has long been recognized that density per se means very little. The key to understanding overpopulation is not population density, but the numbers of people in an area relative to its resources and the capacity of the environment to sustain human activities. That is, to the area's carrying capacity. When is an area overpopulated? When its population can't be maintained without rapidly depleting non-renewable resources, or converting renewable resources into non-renewable ones, and without degrading the capacity of the environment to support the population. In short, if the long-term carrying capacity of an area is clearly being degraded by its current human occupants, that area is overpopulated. By this standard, the entire planet and virtually every nation is already vastly overpopulated. Africa is overpopulated now because, among other indications, its soils and forests are rapidly being depleted, and that implies that its carrying capacity for human beings will be lower in the future than it is now. The United States is overpopulated because it is depleting its soil and water resources and contributing mightily to the destruction of global environmental systems. Europe, Japan, Russia, and other rich nations are overpopulated because of their massive contributions to the carbon dioxide buildup in the atmosphere, among many other reasons.
B. 1. Urbanization at the low level leaves 80% of the country's total population to live in the rural areas. 2. If all the people from China and India lived in the continental U.S., excluding Alaska, this country would still have a smaller population density than England, Holland, or Belgium. 3. Density is generally irrelevant to questions of overpopulation. 4. The major tragedy in his life was the loss of his 3-month-old son and his dreams of the future shattered. 5. This more habitable portion is just a little over half the continent's area, giving an effective population density of 117 per square mile. 6. She concealed her pregnancy right up to the moment of birth. 7. In some countries, infant mortality is a part of everyday life. 8. The crude birth rate per 1,000 is 25.6, and the death rate is 8.2. 9. The sex ratio is 106 males to every 102 females. 10. The 2048 Olympic Games will be held in a world where China is no longer ranked number one in population.
Part 2. Historically, reasons for the migration of Asians to the United States were similar in some ways to those for the Atlantic migration of Europeans, to escape from poverty and civil war, and to find employment, opportunity, and freedom. Chinese laborers were recruited to build a transcontinental railroad in the mid-19th century and provide domestic services in cities such as San Francisco. They were followed by the Japanese and Filipinos in the early 20th century who labored in Hawaiian plantations, California farms, and Alaskan canneries. Of these early Asian Americans, only the Japanese were allowed to immigrate as families at the insistence of the Japanese government. For these early generations, Asians in America were largely bachelor communities of temporary sojourners, with male-to-female ratios as high as 10 to 1. Asian American children in those early years were rare. Since 1970, the demography of this population has changed tremendously. In 2002, Asian Americans were slightly more than 4% of the U.S. population. The growth of the Asian American population since 1970 is due in great part to the elimination of exclusionary immigration policies that existed before 1965, implementation of new refugee statutes directly flowing from the Vietnam War, and the rise of second and subsequent U.S.-born generations. In 1970, there were 1.5 million Asian Americans. This amounts to an 8-fold to 9-fold increase in little more than 30 years.
Part 3. Passage 1. In the United States, aging and aged people are becoming more prominent than ever before in its history. People over 85 now form the fastest growing sector of the entire population. At the turn of the 20th century, people over 65 constituted a mere 4% of the population. Now they account for 13%, which adds up to 11 times as many individuals as in 1900. And both the percentage and the absolute numbers will continue growing in the years to come, until by mid-century, those past the current retirement age will nearly equal in numbers those of high school age and below. These figures are not entirely bad news to many of us. Two American researchers, Rowe and Kahn, have identified both a large number of productive and high-functioning agers and a small number of factors that contribute to their success. Successful agers remain relatively healthy, retain high levels of mental and physical competence, and stay actively and positively engaged in life. They do productive work, keep in touch with friends and family, and pursue interests and activities that they enjoy. Both researchers strongly argue that the assumption of old age as a time of sickly, unproductive dependence does not and need not reflect reality for a large and growing number of people. The good news for both those nearing their golden years and the society that will have to cope with the largest number of seniors in human society is that choices made by individuals and society can have a surprisingly large effect. Both in our personal lives and in our public policies, we can increase people's chances of delaying disease, preventing disability, keeping mental and physical vigor, and making positive contributions far into old age. Death certainly remains inevitable, but a significant portion of the decline many people now suffer in their later years does not. Indeed, we can stop and even reverse losses of muscular strength, balance, bone density, and intellectual sharpness.
Passage 2. The goals of medicine are to help people live longer and more active lives with less suffering and disability. Medicine goes beyond the bedside of patients. Medical scientists engage in a constant search for new drugs, effective treatments, and more advanced technology. It is only during the last 100 years that medicine has developed weapons to fight disease effectively. Vaccines, better drugs and surgical procedures, new instruments, an understanding of sanitation and nutrition have had a large impact on human well-being. Like detectives, physicians and other healthcare professionals use clues to identify and diagnose a specific disease or injury, and then pick the best treatment. Some treatments cure a disease. Others relieve symptoms but do not reverse the underlying disease. Sometimes, no treatment is needed because the disease will get better by itself. The average American born in 1900 had a life expectancy of 47.3 years. Many men and women were feeble by age 40. Effective treatments were so scarce that doctors could carry all their drugs and instruments in a small black bag. By 1998, medical advances had caused life expectancy to increase to about 77 years. Modern healthcare practitioners can prevent, control, or cure hundreds of diseases. People today remain independent and physically active into their 80s and 90s. The fastest growing age group in the population now consists of people aged 85 and over. This medical progress has been expensive. In 1996, Americans spent $1 trillion on healthcare, an average of $3,759 per person. Healthcare accounted for about 13.6% of the gross domestic product, about one-seventh of the country's total output. Spending has grown rapidly from earlier in the 20th century. In 1940, for instance, the United States spent $4 billion on healthcare.
Passage 3. People tend to underestimate their life expectancy, and it is not surprising. It's the look-around problem again. But in an era of rapidly improving life expectancy, the look-around method once again gives the wrong answer. Life expectancy at age 65 is 15.6 additional years for women. For both sexes, this represents an increase of more than 2 years just since 1970. By the time the youngest baby boomers turn 65, the Social Security Administration projects that life expectancy at that age could be as high as 18 more years for men and 21 years for women. That reality makes retirement planning exceptionally difficult. On the day a husband and wife turn 65, they may have only a year or two of living between them to finance, or they may have 70. You may not want to deny a child a college education just so you are sure to have enough money to celebrate your 95th birthday. But you also don't want to become a burden on your children just because you unexpectedly live to be 100 years older than the average life expectancy for people of your age. Although you'll probably live longer than you imagine, don't count on being healthier. The need for and the cost of health care typically increase dramatically as you age. On average, for example, a 40-year-old man consumes about $2,000 a year in healthcare services, whereas a typical 75-year-old consumes 5 times that much. That's why, as the population ages, huge inflationary pressures are put on the healthcare system. How big will those pressures be in the coming decades? Over the past 40 years, healthcare costs have risen an average of 70% faster than the general rise in prices. The federal government predicts that by 2030, healthcare spending will top $6 trillion, representing nearly $1 out of every $3 in the economy. Part 4. This week, the world's population will pass the 6 billion mark, according to United Nations calculations. Though population growth appears to be slowing, the UN says there is still an urgent need for family planning measures and funds to provide food and shelter for those already born. Population experts calculate that the number of people on Earth will exceed 6 billion sometime this year, if it has not already. The International Program Center of the U.S. Census Bureau, for instance, calculated that the mark was passed in July. Still, many population advocacy groups will highlight the passage of this benchmark with the Day of 6 Billion on October 12, 1999. Last month, the United Nations Population Fund, UNFPA, released its State of World Population 1999 report, revealing a sharp cut in UN forecasts for world population over the next 50 years. UNFPA now predicts that Earth's population will approach 8.9 billion by 2050, 500 million fewer people than the organization foresaw at 1994 International Conference on Population and Development in Cairo. UNFPA attributes the slowing trend to progress in promoting gender equality, reproductive health, and reproductive rights. But the agency says increased funding, particularly by donor countries, is urgently needed to sustain that progress. Women are having fewer children than ever before, and population growth has slowed from 2.4 to 1.3% in 30 years. But large families in the recent past mean that there are many more women of childbearing age. Half the world's population is under 25, and there are over a billion young people between 15 and 24, the parents of the next generation. The bulk of this growth is in poor countries and among poor families. The fastest growing regions are sub-Saharan Africa and parts of South Asia and Western Asia. Population growth has slowed or stopped in Europe, North America, and Japan. The U.S. is the only industrial country where large population increases are still projected, largely as the result of immigration. Of the 4.8 billion people in developing countries, nearly three-fifths lack basic sanitation. Almost a third have no access to clean water. A quarter do not have adequate housing, and a fifth have no access to modern health services. In less developed regions, a fifth of children do not attend school to grade 5. There is also increasing pressure on the planet due to wasteful and unbalanced consumption patterns and growing numbers of people, raising demand for food and water. A study by the Sri Lanka-based International Irrigation Management Institute predicted earlier this year that one-fourth of the world's people will face chronic or recurring shortages of fresh water by the year 2050. Croplands continue to shrink, and global per capita grain output has been stagnant for more than a decade. The effects of global warming remains to be seen. Possible changes such as sea level rise, increased storms and floods could affect billions of people. Expanding the level and variety of committed resources and better managing their use is an urgent priority, according to the UNFPA report. The decisions taken in the next decade will determine how fast the world adds the next billion people and the billion after that, whether the new billions will be born to lives of poverty and deprivation, whether equality will be established between men and women, and what effect population growth will have on natural resources and the environment, the report says. For women of childbearing age in developing countries, reproduction is the greatest single health threat. Nearly 600,000 die each year as a result of being pregnant, 70,000 from unsafe and illegal abortion. Millions more suffer infection or injury, and yet many millions still lack the means or information to choose the size and spacing of their families. Many developing countries still lack the resources to implement the program fully, the report notes. At Cairo, governments agreed that $17 billion would be needed annually for reproductive health services by the year 2000. The developing countries were to provide two-thirds of that amount themselves, international donors the remaining third. Today, while developing countries spend about two-thirds of their Cairo target, donor countries provide only $2 billion a year, one-third of the required $5.7 billion. Unit 15. A.
Part 1. A. When it comes to traveling, sometimes taking a journey alone can be great. Traveling solo allows for a time of introspection, relaxation, and self-discovery. The independence gained by going alone allows for the opportunity to experience your choice destination exactly the way you want. Because traveling alone means your money is funding the trip, a wise choice would be to stay in youth hostels. Cast away the misconception that these places are unaccommodating and dirty, and accept the fact that hostels provide safe, clean, comfortable, and most importantly, cheap housing that millions of students and thrifty travelers take advantage of every year. It is relatively easy to book a room at a hostel via the internet, and plenty of information is available about each one. On the other hand, if you can't wait to take advantage of room service and a jacuzzi, opt for a hotel. One of the hardest parts of traveling in general is coming up with a list of what you'll need to bring with you. If you're heading for a foreign country, don't leave home without a bilingual dictionary. Although a strong grasp of a foreign language will prove quite difficult, it is still important to learn phrases like thank you, hello, please, etc. Make a copy of all essential travel documents, such as your passport and health insurance, to leave behind with someone you trust in the event of an emergency. Along with cash, bring a credit card as an emergency method of payment, and make sure to take note of your credit card company's customer service line in case of loss or theft.
B. 1. We could have enjoyed the holiday if we had had less work. 2. After the 9/11 attack, there were more crew members in the front cabin than passengers in Airbus A340-600. 3. Nowadays, security and cost-cutting are the main issues calling the tune in business travel. 4. Recently, United Airlines is offering a return business class fare to New York for £999, while British Airline just over 4,000. 5. Consumers are reluctant to pay for holidays over the internet for fear of credit card fraud. 6. With its masks and costumes, Halloween can be a frightening time for many young children. 7. For many people, Christmas is simply the time of year you shop till you drop. 8. Before and during festivities, it's easy for couples to get wrapped up in everything but each other. 9. May is one of the loveliest months of the year for English travel. 10. While waiting at the airport, Harry booked himself for the following day's bus.
Part 2. War, terrorism, and SARS have hit British business travel badly. From a peak of 8.87 million travelers in 2000, numbers fell by 10% to 8 million in 2002. Government figures for the 9 months to September 2003 show a further slump of 170,000 business passengers over the same period in 2002. Yesterday, BA announced a fresh round of job cuts, knowing that the only way to compete with the no-frills airlines and its traditional rivals is on cost. Unfortunately for BA, cost-cutting is also top of the agenda for its passengers. Airlines have had to reinvent themselves, particularly the mid-sized traditional carriers such as FlyBE, formerly British European, and British Midland. FlyBE Managing Director Jim French said, "What we are facing today is an evolution in the industry, not a cyclical downturn, but a fundamental change in the way this industry operates. The decline in passenger numbers is now leveling off, but the nature of business travel has changed irrevocably. Events since September 11th have made that inevitable. British Airways will, in April, no longer issue paper tickets on the 75% of its routes where electronic tickets can be used. Fast improving technology onboard aircraft is also now delivering live TV news and email, while wireless free use of laptops in hotels and airports is rolling out at a tremendous pace."
Part 3, Passage 1. The Thanksgiving to New Year season is supposed to be a time of good cheer, but for many, the holiday season is a time of sadness, tears, and mounting stress. This year, with the international crisis and the continuing 9/11 fallout, as well as the shaky economy, the holiday blues will probably affect many people. Experts say some populations are hardest hit by the holiday blues. The elderly, the ill, those who are single and live alone, and those who have lost loved ones are most likely to experience some form of depression during a time when everyone seems to focus on the family and have a fulfilled life. For the elderly and those who can't get out, this is the most depressing time of year. That's why it's important to have volunteers spend time with them. By volunteering, people who are experiencing the isolation and sadness associated with the holiday blues can begin to get the attention off themselves and do something to help others. Whether someone comes just to read the Bible to a resident, sing as a small group, or pass out gifts, it's a win-win situation for the volunteers and for the elderly. Another population who may experience difficulty is single men and women who live far away from home. Celery Gray, a communication consultant who lives in Chicago, is hundreds of miles away from her family in Anderson. She does get the blues sometimes and looks forward to the time when she can visit her family at Thanksgiving and Christmas. For those who have lost loved ones, the holidays can be especially disturbing, says Kennebrew, whose own father died several years ago. And while it's important to remember the loved one and the vital role he or she played in your life, it's also important not to dwell on the loss.
Passage 2. There are few safe predictions to be made about the 21st century, but one of the surest is that more of us will visit more places than ever before. Travel and tourism is set to grow into the largest industry in the world. But who will be traveling? Where will they go? And what will they do? Simon Calder has circled the world to find the answers and to tackle the crucial question of the effect of tourism on sensitive environments and cultures. There are precious few places that do not bear the tourist footprints. Even Antarctica is firmly on the vacation map. Sightseeing trips into outer space or to the ocean depths are perhaps only a few years away. Technology is certainly fueling the travel revolution, helping to cut costs and extend horizons. But it also provides opportunities for virtual tourism, where an internet user can explore some of the world's most celebrated sites with a few clicks of the mouse. Indeed, could the Louvre and the Grand Canyon ease the tourist crush with the help of virtual reality? From the Indian webmaster at an internet cafe on the beach in Kerala, to the advertising guru brought in to sell the Seychelles like a soft drink, Calder takes soundings about the pleasures and perils of tourism in the 21st century.
Passage 3. A healthy and happy holiday season is the goal of this wellness program. Achieving that is not always an easy task. Along with the season's celebrations come temptations, and preparations can cause stress and fatigue. It's no wonder people often gain weight and catch colds during the holidays. To help you avoid the season's pitfalls, we'll show you how to organize and prioritize your life during these next few weeks to make room for what really matters and to help you say no to what doesn't. We hope to inspire you to move beyond the commercial aspect of the season to the spiritual. And we offer weekly tips on how to handle 4 holiday challenges: fitting in exercise, socializing, dealing with stress, and buying gifts. My husband and I cope with the chaos of the holidays by not getting too involved. We don't give gifts on designated holidays, but save them for when we really want to express ourselves. When I go to holiday parties, I think of them mainly as an opportunity to meet new people and spend time with old friends. By de-emphasizing food and drink, I find it easier to stick to my diet, which means no bread or dairy, and I still have a great time. As your advisor, I'd like to remind you of an important point. If you've come this far with us on our 12-month program, you already have a lot to celebrate, a new, healthier you. And that, perhaps, is the best gift you'll receive this year. Part 4. For 2004, we have once more expanded the range of trips for the more independent traveler who prefers to travel just with friends or family. Encouraged by strong demand for this self-guided style of travel, we have developed new trips in France, Italy, Spain, and Switzerland. Most of these trips focus on walking or cycling, always at an easy or moderate level. But our trip to Nepal is a bit different in its focus on sightseeing. Our routes explore historic and scenic regions and give you plenty of contact with the local people, who are, of course, a major part of the experience. We see the main sites, but also explore areas where the people are not dependent on tourism. Our hope is that you will gain an insight into a region that is much more personal and involved than offered by a standard package holiday. We have chosen self-guided to describe these trips as it conveys the flexibility built into our itineraries. There is always time to stop and look, wander away from the given route, take a late breakfast, or linger over lunch. Within the loose framework of pre-booked accommodation, you can go wherever you want, whenever you want, and at a speed to suit you. On all our self-guided trips, clients are supplied with maps and a detailed description of the itinerary with accommodation details and an easy-to-follow set of route notes. You need not worry about hotel reservations, baggage transfers, or researching the best route. We take care of it all, leaving you free to enjoy the activities and sights at your own pace. You do, however, need to be able to read a map, and it is advisable to have a compass and that you should know how to use it. Flexibility is the key to self-guided holidays. Stop when you like, drinking in the views or lingering at interesting sights, all in the knowledge that comfortable lodgings and tasty food will be waiting at the end of the day. The meals included in the trip cost are detailed in each description. Often we include meals at the lodgings, but sometimes when there is a wide choice of convenient places to eat, we leave you to select a restaurant for your evening meal. Most routes are designed to be within the capabilities of most reasonably active people. We strongly recommend that you do some walking or cycling before you go, but you do not need to be super fit. You will need to be able to ride or walk for 4 or 5 hours spread over a full day. But of course, you can push your bike up the steep bits or take a break from walking to admire the view. Each trip description gives details of distances or timings. Please read them carefully. If you need more information, you can request the details that are normally sent with your booking confirmation. On some trips, there are extra costs involved in traveling to and from the destination. These are not included in the trip cost when it is difficult for us to pre-arrange the service required, but easy for you to arrange on the spot. For example, a shuttle bus from an airport to a station is easily joined as you walk out of the airport terminal, and jumping into a cab at a station is easy to do.